The following is an at-will presentation.
My little shaky leaf on the tree of knowledge. Don't be afraid of the world. Let the world be afraid of you. Don't be afraid of the wind. It only blows to cool you down. Don't be afraid of the rain, because without it you wouldn't grow. Don't be afraid of the heat, as you have an entire tree to protect you. You are part of something much bigger than yourself. My little shaky leaf, don't be afraid of the seasons. They are what change your colors. My little shaky leaf, you must hold on with everything that you have. Let the veins of your interior explode with power and fucking rage for life. You are not alone. We are all shaking, and one day we all will fall. But my dear, you are a fighter, and I believe in you. I always have, and I always will. And when you fall, you must know that you will fertilize the soil and grow again. My little shaky leaf on the tree of knowledge, you are wiser and prettier and more confident and stronger than you'll ever know. You are the soloist in the symphony of leaves. When you vibrate, you send the purest music to the world. You are the electric orange in the fall. You are the delicate flower that blooms in the summer and sings to the bees. You are alive. Breathing, resilient, destined for greatness. Don't ever forget that, my little shaky leaf.
My name is Nico Tortorella. I'm an actor. It's my job to play different people on screen. And in my real life, well, I like knowing that who I am depends on who you ask. Here's the thing. My sexuality has become a topic of conversation recently. Look, I don't fit into a box. I was never in a closet. I was never even in the house. I'm not gay. I'm not straight. I'm attracted to people who are unapologetically themselves. I'm in love with love. And most importantly, I love and respect myself. Everybody's talking about gender and sexuality these days. This show is a chance for me to broaden the conversation. No matter how you identify or don't, the common thread that motivates us all is love. So each episode, I'm going to talk to someone I love or have yet to love about how our gender identity, sexuality, and relationships shape us, define us, and make us original, beautiful fucking creatures of love. Welcome to the Love Bomb. This is a conversation with a girl I love named Molly. Hi, Molly Bernard.
Hi, Nico Tortorella.
How are you doing?
Fine. It's fine and hot and sweaty. Today, I had a cleavage sweat this morning.
Oh, she barely even has cleavage, but she has cleavage sweat.
Right? That's what she thought.
I love it. What did you do about this cleavage sweat of yours?
I'm wearing like a very thin silk cotton blend shirt, so I pressed it, and I just watched the sweat like form on my cleavage on my shirt.
Do you have a bra on?
I do.
A bra. Do you say bra or bra?
I like to say, hey, bra.
Hey, bra.
Hey, bra.
Hey, bra. Nice bra.
Thanks. Yeah, no, I have a bra. I have a brassiere on.
Okay.
It's like a training bra, basically.
It just holds them puppies up.
Yeah, which we've already established your boobs are bigger than mine.
I do. I have bigger boobs than you.
You literally do.
But you are, like, honestly one of the tiniest humans. Just in, not in terms of short, but just you are, like, tiny itty bitty.
I know. This girl in college, her name was Liz Roche. She said to me once,
but we're doing first and last
names. We're doing first and last name. But she was never Liz. She was always Liz Roche. She said to me once, Molly, you're either a very small human or a huge primordial dwarf.
I like the latter. I mean, a huge primordial dwarf.
That's what I am.
Okay. Redhead, nonetheless. So one of the kind,
that's one of those pronunciation issues, though. Hector and Dorf. Do you remember when it used to be Victor and Rolf? So in the pilot, it was Victor and Rolf.
Okay, wait. Hold on. Pause. We're talking about our TV show that we're on together called Younger on TV. Then.
We are. And in the Topless Tuesday scene, the first scene I shot in season one was in the middle of Bryant Park on a Monday. I was topless, and I was so nervous, and I was pretending not to be nervous, and they changed Victor and Rolf at the last minute to Hector and Dorf. And I was so freaked out that my boobs were out Monday, noon, lunch hour, Bryant Park, that I kept saying Hector and Dwarf.
Dwarf.
And Amina came over, who was our script supervisor.
Dwarf.
She was like, Molly, it's Dorf, not Dwarf.
I mean, for Molly Bernard to be shooting her first scene on a television show, topless, in Central Park, is like a huge move.
Big, like, old big move.
Were you like just shithead nervous?
I I was so nervous that I wasn't nervous. You know that I'm sure you've seen that happen to me, where I'm like, I'm so freaked out that I just write it, and I'm like almost so dissociated. I'm great.
Right.
It's that, but that's the kind of thing I didn't. So, you know, like my whole life is has been in the theater, and so this show, Younger,
this show.
has like turned my world upside down, because there's, you can't train for that kind of emotional and like endurance. You have to trick yourself into thinking that it's all okay.
Well, I mean, we can train for it every day in our waking life.
But when the pressure is on at that like level, I don't know. Since starting work on this show, I've just become used to feeling a little freaked out all of the time.
But overall, you are a little freaked out all the time in life, right?
Constantly.
Constantly. What's that like? Why? What's that about?
I don't know. I'm a nervous Nancy.
But it's more control now than I mean, I could safely say, knowing you for the last 3 years, 2.5 years, whatever, two years, that you have a much better grasp of your outbursts.
Neuroses. Okay, so here's the thing, is that I'm incredibly neurotic, and I think in a way I'm less anxious and more neurotic. Like, I'm overly thoughtful, I'm overly analytic, I'm too in my head, I get in my own way. And so it's not necessarily like crippling anxiety, it's like I'm existentially concerned at every given, like at every waking moment.
Right.
And that's really uncomfortable, actually, because I think people, like, I think sometimes in the beginning, you mistook me as fearful. And then as you got to know me, you understood that I'm, like, a fierce motherfucker. But it just manifests in really kind of funny, weird ways.
I never thought you were fearful. I never thought you were fearful. I thought that I always have known that you are extremely educated and smart.
But that can get in my,
well, that's what I'm saying,
way.
Is that like sometimes that you like think a little bit too much about everything, and it fucking like stops you in your tracks.
Absolutely. I was reading an article about like overly educated women, and how that's like a phenomenon with women who are really smart. They're perceived as weak. They think of themselves as weak in moments, because they like can't get out of their head.
Right.
And it keeps you from being really active in the world as like a fierce fucking woman, you know?
Yeah, but there's a way to control all those little voices.
No, dude, there is and there isn't. I mean, listen, I like meditate every day. I run every day. I'm vigilant, and I'm good to my body. I'm good to my soul. I'm good to my heart. I write. I'm active, you know? I'm a thinker, and I speak. I like don't withhold my feelings. I'm transparent with them in order to figure them out, because I can't do it alone. I don't pretend to do it alone. But like, I don't know. There's not really a way. There's a way to welcome the voices. You can't like really get them out. And let's be clear. Like, they're not. I don't have like voices.
Yes. No. It's, I'm not like saying you're a crazy person at all.
Sure.
Because I mean, I would be the first one to say that you are if I thought you were.
I know you.
I have no filter at all.
Oh, but wait. No, seriously, Nico. I think it's criticism. It's like a critic in your head, and that's like, sometimes it manifests in anxiety, and other times it's just straight up like, you did that wrong, or no, like it's just legitimate criticism, you know?
Yeah. No, I understand that.
Do you not experience that?
No, I do. But I think I do a really good job of like thinking about it really fast and then being like, nah, fuck that, and not thinking about it anymore.
I want to take a lesson from your book?
Lesson from my book.
A card from your deck. What? What did you say?
Oh, I got a couple cards for you. Are you in love right now, Molly B?
No, but I think my heart is full.
Well, that's nice.
My heart is full.
What does that mean, your heart is full?
That's a tremendous follow-up question. Thank you for the follow-up. What does it mean? It means that I'm kind of giddy. I'm uncertain. I'm excited. I feel like, you know, I'm looking at my phone because I'm looking for the text. Mm-hmm. Having dates, hanging out, sharing dogs.
So you just started dating a boy.
I did.
Not too long ago.
Not too very near ago.
What, weeks ago?
Yeah, just a couple.
Weeks ago. So you're in that like honeymoon phase.
Very new. Very, very, very new.
Do you feel like you have a good grasp of who he is as a person?
Not yet. No. And I like that. I like that. I like that it's going to take a while.
Right.
And I'm still not sure. I mean, I'm never sure though. Like there was only one person I was totally sure about.
Well, let's talk about him for a minute.
Okay.
Can we?
Yes, we can.
You were in a very long-term relationship.
I was, during my time at Yale.
How many years? I'm sorry. Let me just pick that name up off the floor and put it back in my pocket. Molly B. went to Yale for graduate school.
Yeah, I went to the Yale School of Drama. AKA Jail School of Trauma.
But she, her undergrad was at
Skidmore College.
Skidmore in
upstate New York.
And your major was Soviet studies, correct?
It was.
Like, what?
Why was she doing that?
Like, no, seriously, though, why were you doing that?
Okay. My grandparents were Russian Jews, and I was always drawn to Russian culture. I took a class with this lady named Kate Graney at Skidmore, and she happens to be like the North American expert on Soviet and post-Soviet studies. And she happens to teach at Skidmore and like has her family in Saratoga Springs. So I became friends with her because I took just a general history class with her and fell in love. Mm-hmm. And I got really into the kind of intro to Russian studies. And we just made my own, like that major didn't exist. We made it together. So it was an independent study. So I was in class with no one.
Wow.
But that's the thing.
You loved it.
Oh, I loved it. My other mentor was a man named Will Bond, who you would fucking love. He's a unicorn. He's a very special performer and kind of philosopher on theater. And he, because I also doubled in theater, but theater studies, not like performance. And Bondo, his name is Will Bond, but I call him Bondo. His birth name is James Bond.
Shut up.
No.
That's stupid.
But so I also did, so both of my majors were independent studies. So I just hung out with these older folks and they were my best friends. Like I don't have like a lot of close friends from college. My closest friends were my teachers.
Were your professors.
Yeah.
I love that. Okay. So you met your long-term boyfriend.
Yes.
At Yale.
I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I did.
His major was?
So at the Yale School of Drama, we were both actors.
Okay, so he's an actor. I don't think I ever realized he was an actor.
Yeah, he is. He was. I'm not sure. He's teaching now.
And you guys were together for how long?
3 years.
3 years. And you were in love with this boy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, wildly.
He was, I think, still to this day, he might have, I think he was definitely the love of my life up until that point and still to this point. He was just beautiful. He was the first person, Nico, that I felt like, oh, this is my match. This is like my intellectual, my brain partner. Like we made love with our minds constantly. We fell in love. We fell in love before we ever even like touched.
Was that the first time you fell in love?
That way, yeah.
That way.
Like adult love.
What is adult love?
Sacrifice.
For both partners, obviously,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And choice. It's like, I think for me, it was the discovery of choice to like stay with this person every single day. For me, adult love was like I've got a wandering eye, very admittedly, and I like deal with it, you know? Mm. I'm insatiable. And so I stopped looking. I just was like, I was like starry-eyed for 3 years, and it basically never shifted. Like and in fact, I did fall out of love with him a couple of times because we were living together and it was really heavy, but I always fell back in. And I never ventured, you know, I never got close to doing anything, like, irresponsible.
Cheating.
Yeah, right. Or even, but that the notion of cheating wasn't even, it was foreign. Like, it wasn't even, it would have never threatened our relationship.
Right. Did you guys still talk? Are you guys still friends?
I just texted him this week. I think we're going to try and see each other, yeah. I want to be friends with him, but I think we had to break up solidly because the love was so deep, and we haven't really seen or talked in a couple of years.
How was the breakup itself?
Hard.
Yeah?
Hard. Really hard.
How long after the breakup were you available to other options?
Way too soon.
Really?
Which that's what made the breakup really hard.
Interesting.
Yeah, I couldn't deal with that loss. He was like the love of my life, and I kind of stupidly jumped into something pretty soon after and then did not process the loss of that love.
It sucks when you lose somebody that is not only your partner in crime, but like also your best friend.
Your parent. I mean, we had this like incredibly codependent love that, yeah, it was heavy.
And you guys were living together when you broke up?
I had just moved to New York. He was still finishing up.
Oh, okay. Okay. Is there a relationship growing up that you like looked up to as like what the ultimate love is?
No. I mean, my grandparents were partners by the time I kind of was cognizant of what a relationship might be. But I knew that they must have had other lives, you know? Like, I'm not convinced they were always a perfect couple. But by the time I was around, they were a team. And that, I think, I looked up to a lot. When my grandmother died, my grandfather was devastated. And that is when I began to understand their relationship and kind of look up to it. But I was a little older when that happened, like a teenager. But now I look up to Susan and Don, who are, you know, my ostensibly my moms, and they found each other much later in life.
Right, and they've been together for a long time.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. But Don said something really interesting to me. A couple weeks ago, I was feeling really sad. I was like, I'm never going to be available to fall in love again. My late 20s are just dragging me down. Like, I don't know how I'm going to survive these late 20s. They're just crazier than you. Because I don't know, as a woman, you hear that like the late 20s are getting nuts and get painful and dark. But I was like, somehow, maybe I'll escape that. And I won't experience that. But they've been really hard. And Don was like, listen, Susan would have never fallen in love with me or even been able to see me until my like late 30s, which is when they got together.
Yeah, I mean, I think as we all get older, we grow into ourselves more, and I think that we start really truly understanding what it means to love and respect ourselves. And once that happens, I think other people can see us for
well. Then our suddenly true colors. You're right. Then suddenly you're visible. You're available. You're more beautiful than you've ever been. As my friends are figuring their shit out, it's so inspiring to me, and it makes me feel less alone because my friends are becoming more gorgeous to me, and I can see them. Just there's just less congestion.
Like, who are you talking about specifically?
Well, I'm talking about you, my queen. I'm talking about you. I've also got some babely girlfriends who are just, their shit is falling into place, totally. And they're stunning. But I also see, I like the mess. Let me just read you this thing that I just read. I was reading The New Yorker this morning, and look at that. Listen to this. She says, to be a good human being is to have a kind of openness to the world, the ability to trust uncertain things beyond your own control that can lead you to be shattered. But specifically, hold on, I want to share one thing.
Yeah,
listen to this.
Gentlemen, yeah.
No. I'm always like,
no, please,
you know.
I love this about you.
Listen to this. Yeah. What I am calling for, so this is Martha Nussbaum. She's a philosopher. She's an important philosopher. She says, what I'm calling for is a society of citizens who admit that they are needy and vulnerable.
100%. I mean, first of all, though, like, I think the way the media and pop culture and everything that's on TV and everything that's on social media, like, the people that are the most successful right now are the most vulnerable. They're, like, showing everything.
Yeah, stoicism is gone. I mean,
100%.
I've never understood stoicism. I don't even look up to people who are so stoic anymore. I used to want to be more reserved. But I would be so, you know, like you. Your juiciness is the very, it's also the thing that can kick you in your butt.
100%.
You know?
And I mean, I was literally raised in a big Italian family.
I
and
love
like,
your family.
But we were taught to like never air your dirty laundry. Don't trust anyone but your family. Keep everything to yourself. Deny, 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 deny. And like that, literally every day growing up, that's what we would hear. And I just never understood any of that. Like how could I really find who I was if I like didn't talk about it to anybody else? That wasn't from, you know, the same blood pool.
Right. There's no way.
No. Which is why it's so important that, like, we have real friendships like you and I have. I mean, I think that you and I have an ability to talk to each other that is unlike a lot of friendships that
likewise.
I have.
Well, we can code switch, you know? We can get real raunchy and, like, real. We can go on and on about RuPaul's Drag Race and a million other, like, you know, other, like, very mainstream things. And then we can, like, major heart talk.
Yeah.
Also, you're a stealth intellectual.
Oh, thanks, babe.
You are.
I struggle with that idea a lot because I don't think that I'm the most educated human being in the world.
But you are.
I really appreciate that.
You really are.
I'm working on it.
But you're so smart and you're quick and you know a lot more than you think you do.
About certain things, I think. I think that I know a lot about love, and I know a lot about relationships, and I know a lot about what it means to, like, be comfortable in your own skin.
Well, and that's, when push comes to shove, that's what you need. But that also makes you, like, world smart.
Right.
Like, you are generally...
I'm street smart. I mean,
you
that's
are.
That's what it is.
But you also understand the world.
Yeah, yeah. On an emotional level, I feel like.
you asked me fucking a single question about politics or what's going on in, you know, Afghanistan, I couldn't tell you one thing.
But that's not smart. That's reading the news that's already been filtered that may or may not even be true.
Totally.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. That's a totally different thing.
Yeah, which I understand. All right, let's switch gears for a second.
Okay.
How do you identify romantically, sexually?
Sexually? I want to be... I, like, want to be gay. I want to be bi, but I think I can't help being straight.
I think you're the straightest queer person I've ever met.
I am the straightest queer person because I am quite queer. Yeah. And I, you know, I'm involved in the queer community and most of my dear friends are queer. And
your moms?
I read so much queer literature and I'm involved in the community. But I don't know. If I were to meet an amazing woman, absolutely, I'd be down.
Yeah.
And I've always had this since I was a kid. I've felt like... If I meet the person that I'm meant to be with, male or female, that's it. Right. Full stop.
But you've never even kissed a girl.
I have kissed a girl.
Oh.
But I would like to experience a woman, for sure. They're so much prettier and softer and more, and so much smarter than men.
I agree with that.
They're just so much better.
100% I agree with that. Men are stupid.
Men are stupid, but sometimes so. But here's the thing, just to like call back on to our earlier conversation, being in my head all the time, it's sometimes a wonderful, like... I was writing about our friendship separate from the ode that I wrote to you, but I was writing about how much I need male friendships.
Totally.
Because you don't spend nearly as much time in your head to your benefit.
Right.
And that I can learn from that. And that you just, when we flew together to Austin, I've never felt safer on a plane, despite having a panic attack that it was still going to go down. I was like, I'm with Nico. Everything's okay.
I feel like, especially when I'm on a plane, I do a really good job of like, kicking into survival mode for some reason. Like whenever I go to the airport, I feel like I have to like gear up like I'm going to war.
Yeah.
And I don't really know, like I'll put on like all of my accessories at once and like wear three jackets and have bags that match and just like have a hat on and glasses and it but like I don't know, there's something so calming about the fact that like I'm ready for anything when I'm on a plane, but I'm like excited and happy and calm about it.
You also made me feel like we were on the ground. I never felt like I was on the plane.
Oh.
If I thought that I was on the plane is when I had to have my G&T.
Your G&T?
My gin and tonic, yes.
Oh, my G&T.
By the way, when I lived in Russia, there was 50 cent, well, but I don't know how many rubles that was. It was
like
so long ago.
A wrapper, 50 cent?
Yeah, like the wrapper, 50 cent. There were these 50 cent cans of gin and tonic, and you can drink like anywhere. You can just drink on the street.
In Russia.
Yeah, it was like a Sprite can of gin and tonic, and that was just basically how I was functioning for 4 months in Russia.
So I would have died in Russia is what you're saying. Probably would have never come back.
You never
Speaking of which, I'm going to Russia in 2 days, so...
Oh my God, I'm so excited for you. I can't wait.
Thank God I'm sober.
Thank God you're sober, dude.
God. You actually met me when I wasn't sober.
I know, that's what my ode is about.
Yeah, yeah.
Part of it.
I was a mess.
I knew you were a mess and had no idea.
Yeah, I did a really good job of hiding it.
Except
that one time. Which we've talked about in here. If you listen to me on Will's podcast, I talked about getting the dreadlocks and going to the rap party.
I just have to tell you about this. So when I was like 10, I was obsessed with Culture Club and I was obsessed with Boy George. And I watched Behind the Music of Boy George. And you, I know for a fact I told you this that night, but I was obsessed and particularly afraid of Boy George's cocaine phase because, and I like don't really know what drugs are, but I knew that he was going through a cocaine phase because Behind the Music told me this. And he had white dreadlocks and he had wrapped it up in a turban, much like you looked when you walked into the fucking rap party. But he also got really into like putting powder all over his face, perhaps to like camouflage the drugs all over his body. But he looked like a like glistening matte mummy with dreadlocks. And that when you walked in, I was like, that's Boy George. Mm. No, it's Nico. But when I was 10, I made everyone at summer camp call me Boy George.
I mean, I feel like there's part of a little gay boy living inside of you.
Oh, are you kidding? She is fabulous.
She is great.
I mean, she's brave.
You're obsessed with RuPaul's Drag Race just like I am.
Obsessed.
Let's talk about Lauren for a second.
Okay.
On Younger. You play Lauren, who is this just... outrageously fantastic little pixie of a human being.
Yeah.
How would you say you relate to her or don't relate to her?
Well, I really, as the seasons have gone on, the gap has gotten smaller and smaller. At first, it was tremendous. She's wild. She's entitled. She loves herself. That's the thing. That's really what I discovered this year when we had to do those interviews. I began to see that I'm playing a woman on TV who loves herself. And I don't think women are portrayed as loving themselves.
On television.
On television and in general.
Yeah. 100%.
It permeates the culture.
Especially on a show that's like base. I mean, the entire show revolves around these four women, right? Five women.
Yeah.
And all of them are deeply flawed.
Yep.
Characters, 100%. Yep. I would say, except for Lauren.
I know.
Like, you are this light of all of these women on the show that, like, is incredible.
She is. I really wish I had a friend like Lauren. And it turns out you are my Lauren.
I was just going to say, bitch.
You are. I mean, it's deep, though, because she is a woman. And, like, she fucking loves herself. She's bold. She'll sleep with anyone. She's brave. She doesn't doubt herself. She has all of the answers. It's really sweet this season because when she doesn't have the answers, that scene where she like calls on Kelsey and Liza to help her figure this situation out.
We can't talk about that yet.
But I was so vague. I just said this situation.
Okay. Yeah.
You just see Lauren have some need this season, which is so cute. There's breadsticks involved.
Oh, there are lots of breadsticks involved.
That's funny as hell.
What does it mean to love yourself today? As Molly Bernard, not as Lauren.
What does it mean to love myself? So very subjectively.
Yes.
I think absence of self-doubt, absence of criticism, kind of being content to just be that to me, it's like that is what I'm aiming for. Mm-hmm. Not some kind of like ecstasis or permanent happiness or state, because I don't think that's real. And I don't think that's also, I also don't think that's a negative way of looking at the world. I just think to be fine, you know, waking up, going, not doubting, just feeling good.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, what is it for you?
Yeah, I think most importantly, look, it's easy for somebody to love all the good qualities about themselves. That's obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But to recognize your flaws and to cherish them and nurture them, and
the same way you might the good, yeah,
and know that they're going to get better, and know that there's only one person in the world that has the power to do that, and that's yourself. Like, that's what really loving yourself means. It's just believing in yourself, even when shit is fucking awful.
Yes, and that's when it gets really scary, when you lose that belief, that like fundamental belief in yourself. I think that's when things get dark for me.
Yeah, and I mean, it's easy. It's not, I mean, it's easy to lose that is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
What I just said is a very difficult thing to do.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot easier said than done. But I think there's a way to do it. And I think that the easiest way to recognize it is surround yourself with people that feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
And like, just be inspired by how other people are living their lives.
Yeah.
And jump on that bandwagon. You write every day, yeah?
Yeah.
For the most part. Mm-hmm. And you have forever.
I have for a while. For as long as I can remember. I mean, I to be honest, I go through phases. There are some phases where I just can't even stand the thought of it. But even on those days when I force myself to sit down, it's important. I work things out through language.
Yeah.
Language is very oppressive and it's really limiting. But it does help me if I can like dig a little. It helps me like clarify, not to make clear, but to clarify the way that like a toner kind of just gets things
clearer.
Yeah. It's not like I then understand. It's that I have a better chance of seeing it in a way that I can make sense of it.
Totally.
And also, I sometimes write a bit creatively, and that gets me out of my own cycle and narcissism.
Well, to take you out of your own narcissism and bring it to me for a second.
Yes, my dear.
You wrote something for today.
Yes, I did.
Would you care to share it with our lovely audience?
Yes, lovely audience. I want to read to you what I wrote for Nico.
I'm blown away by this.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I've been writing a lot.
I know.
Lately, because of this podcast, and I've always like kind of written, but it wasn't something that was on like the top of my list of my go-to therapy by any means. And because of this, I've been writing for each episode, and to see it come back to me, you constantly blow my mind, constantly.
That's such folly, dude.
It's true. So please talk about me now.
Okay. I'm going to do a reading of this for you. So Nico and I wrote each other odes, or that's how I was looking at it. But yeah. This is like an ode to you, though I think you're going to have more coming to you.
I love more.
Oh, I know you do.
More is better.
Okay, are you ready?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, lovely audience, here we go. A unicorn amongst us. The unicorn is both celebrated and feared. The unicorn challenges and entices. The unicorn is concerned about fellow unicorns treading this earth. The unicorn is solidarity. They say that unicorns have gone extinct, or rather, that they never were. Not this, not that, beyond definition. A gorgeous face, a gorgeous bod, a hunk of a man, but what a force he is, what a soul, what a heart. Brave, loving, brilliant, caring. A man who is teaching me daily about friendship, about responsibility, about loyalty, about myself. The first person to say, get it together. To say, I see you. Your self-doubt is nonsense. You are brave. You are monster. To implore, you must own yourself. To meet a person who makes you better changes your hardwiring, fundamentally. And reading is, after all, fundamental. To be loved with generosity, he asks nothing in return but that you are true to yourself. There's some lines here. I met you before you were sober. I felt your danger like a seismic sensor. I, who lives in fear of substances tarring purity, I stayed away. It wasn't until you were a proud seltzer drinker that I saw all you are, that I smelled and tasted your grace. Friends we became, true, loving friends. I feel blessed, though the internet has tarred that word with irony and flaccidity. Nonetheless, I feel entirely blessed, substantively blessed, to know you. You have blown up my world, and now you are a voice in my head. A, what would Nico do? He'd be brave, he'd be kind, he'd smile, he'd look good as hell, and he'd have mink oiled his leather shoes. Your kindness radiates off your skin, off your heart-shaped nose. Levity is all, a plane in the sky. Hey, Nico, what's in your bag? Joy.
It's like, if anybody who is listening to this right now, if you, like, want to show your friends how much they mean to you, like, just write them something.
Write them a little ode.
It like, honestly, it warms my heart so much. I called my mom this morning. I was on the phone with her, and Molly sent this to me last night, and I read it for her, and she was, like, teary-eyed. She was like, how do you find these people? She was like, I wouldn't be able in a million years to write one line that's in there, but, like, you have found this, like, flock of females that are just so powerful.
You have. When I was at your 4th of July party, it was me, Alicia, and Bethany, and
Ivanka.
And Ivanka. And I don't know. It was just like, you have this collection of really fierce, brave, tiny, big, smart women. And big-eyed women. They all have big eyes.
True.
But, and like, I'm independent. I've become friends with them independently, but I wouldn't have found them without you.
It makes me so happy that you have actually become friends with all of my closest friends.
It's
outside
wild.
Of me.
I know, it's wild. Because they're also like, you know, I run in a circle of people that like I wouldn't have met them any other way.
Right.
And it's that you are unlike anyone else I know. And you really have like blown up my world. You've helped me see the world through a very different lens.
My favorite line is that in that is when you say he asks nothing of you but to be true to yourself. And that one really hit me because I think it's true. I'm not looking for anything in return from really anybody.
From anybody.
But
you do demand that of the people in your life.
It's not even a question that I demand that. I don't have time to have a relationship with somebody that's not living their true self. I just don't.
Well, but that's the thing. That's, I think, how we friend fell in love. You were like, this girl is neurotic and weird and in her own head, but she's herself. She's, but, like, flamboyantly who she is.
You are one of the most powerful people I've ever met. And but you don't even, like, realize it all of the time.
I know.
And so I'm just kind of like, I want to be this mirror that's in front of you to be like, look, like, it can look like this too. It doesn't have to look like what it is in your head all the time.
I know. And that's a tremendous gift for some, for someone like me. For me. For me.
I love you, Molly
Bernard. I love you, dude, so much.
What do you think your life is going to look like in 10 years in terms of love? Love, love, not work.
I have no idea.
What do you want it to, like, what's your ultimate goal in your love life? I know that's a pretty ridiculous question, but
I want to have a partner who we read together and out loud to each other and do things in our bodies, have a kid, you know, go on wild adventures, be there when each other's loved ones are ill, make a family. I want to really give over to somebody, which seems like right now not something that I'm would know how to do, which is so funny because I've done that before. And now it feels like I wouldn't even know. It feels like I forgot how to ride the bike.
I mean, sometimes you just need to stretch out your calves before you get back on, though, you know?
Meaning metaphorically what?
Meaning, like, it's okay that you don't.
Right, because it will never be that again.
Right now.
How I was dedicated in that relationship will never manifest like that again.
Not true.
No, it won't be like that.
Look, no two relationships are exactly the same.
That's what I'm saying.
But you, no matter what, are constantly the same, a similar version of yourself in every single relationship that you have.
Right, for better or for worse.
For better or for worse. Yeah, yeah. But as you continue to get older and you see more of yourself, like, they're going to get better. If you keep getting better, it's inevitable.
I don't disagree with you at all, but I do have some doubt about. I just think I still have a ton more growing to do. Actually, like, I want to be more evolved than I am.
Yeah,
but I'm not convinced I am.
But I mean, how do you do that?
Through continuing to live.
Yeah.
Through continuing to date and know people and learn yourself
and you are doing all of that. You have been in a handful of relationships since your last one.
Mm-hmm.
You did one of the, like, ballsiest maneuvers I've seen in a long time with the relationship that you ended last month. He, asked you if you were in, right?
Mm-hmm.
He basically told you he loved you and that he didn't have time to do it unless you were in. And you responded with,
I'm not in.
Because you know where you are in your life.
Yeah.
Like, not everyone is capable of doing that.
I know. I said I'm not in, and I refuse to slip in.
Yeah.
Not, and that, I'm sorry, that kind of seemed very graphic.
I refuse to slip on in.
I refuse to slip in. But no, but you know, that's how most relationships start. You kind of end up in it rather than doing it very intentionally, and which is very much what you and Alicia have done, which I love, that you guys made a very, very clear, active choice.
Right.
And it was not cute or, you know, trepidatious or playing it cool. No one was leading anybody on. You just were like, you're you, I'm me, I want you, we're doing this.
Yeah. I mean, we've...
And it took time.
Yeah, it took a lot of time. I mean, it's taken 3 years for us to get to this point.
I know.
I mean, we've played every fucking game in the book. I mean, we've always been very honest with each other about where we were in our lives, but we're finally available for each other.
Well, that's the thing. It's so beautiful.
Yeah. Do you have any questions for me? I feel like in all of these podcasts that I've done, it's been very much so just like me asking people questions. But I think that you and I talk about this stuff all the time.
I know.
Like, literally every time we're with each other, we'll just spend hours just talking about love, really.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I just kind of want to open it up for a second.
Did you grow up, like, repressed? Because your mom and your brother are so flamboyant and nuts and amazing that I can't imagine a world that you were quiet or...
No, I was not quiet about anything. I grew up in a traditional household in terms of sexuality, race, and gender.
And when did you start, like, busting out of those norms?
I mean,
in terms of, if you want to talk about this, if you don't, we don't have to, but, like, your sexuality.
Well, this is actually a pretty funny story. So the first dude I ever hooked up with, it was in high school, and he was one of my really good friends. And my girlfriend, on and off throughout all of high school, was his best friend.
Mm-hmm.
So she had told me
through the gate vine
that he was gay, and he was like really scared and really uncomfortable about it and didn't want to talk about it to anybody, but like he opened up to her about it, and I was like, I got this. So we like got wasted one night. We were in the city partying, and we were like on our way back home into the suburbs, and we were in a cab, and he was like, should we drop you off first or me off? And I was like, I'm just going to come over and just stay at your house. And like in my mind, I was like, he's really going through something right now. And there was something like selfless about it. Like I wanted to help him. I like hooked up with the first boy in my life because I knew how much he was in pain and I wanted to help him through it.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, of course I did.
But
from
a sexual standpoint, or from a like, I'm enjoying this because participating in this person's discovery.
Definitely from a sexual standpoint. We woke up the next day and he was like a nervous wreck, right? Mm. And I was hungover too. I was uncomfortable with the fact that I did it. I felt gross. I felt like my body, like, I felt like I did something wrong. Probably just because of the fact that I have been told that it was wrong my entire life. But I remember, I'll never forget, we woke up and we were sitting outside of his house and smoking a cigarette. And he started talking about how uncomfortable he was with everything. And he was like, "Are you fucking freaking out? Are you freaking out?" I was like, "No, look, like, I don't define myself by my sexuality. This doesn't make me who I am at all. Like, this is just part of the picture."
Hmm.
And I don't know. I'll never forget that conversation.
I think that's really kind of pivotal to how I see you. Not that story, but your kind of anecdote at the end. Because I have never viewed you as bisexual.
Right.
I think it's really apropos in your case that you are fluid because, I find you, as soon as I think you're heterosexual, we end up having, like, an hour-long conversation about all things gay. And so, you know what I mean? And you are such a princess and you're such a fucking queen and it's amazing. So there's no way that you're my gay straight, like, best friend.
Mm-hmm.
You're not bi. You're just, you're seamless.
Well, okay, so this leads to a bigger question that I've been having on every single one of these podcasts, mm-hmm. is this term bisexual. Like, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
The first thing that comes to my mind are, like, those gross, like, 90s views of bisexual. Like, the political view of, like, people being, like jokes being made about bisexuals being greedy. So bisexual to me has been given, like, a kind of a negative connotation based on society not understanding it.
100%.
Whereas fluid to me, I understand as it's less about identity.
Yeah. It's less about where you're sticking your penis, actually.
Right. Well, and it's also, well, I guess you're right. I mean, but I wonder what that is for a woman. Because for a woman to be fluid, I think people wouldn't take it as seriously. People, like, also with women kind of homosexuality, I feel like men don't take it seriously.
What do you mean? Like,
men don't
gay men don't take lesbians seriously?
Yeah. Bisexuality feels very limiting, yes. Whereas identifying as fluid kind of keeps it's open.
Right.
And well, it's and always moving.
The more conversations I keep having on this topic, the more I am sympathizing with the bisexual community. And so many people fought for so long just for the term bisexual, right?
Right.
And on paper, bisexual means the ability to be in a relationship with a man and the ability to be in a relationship with a woman.
And isn't that being fluid?
So, yeah. So it's just another fucking word for it.
Well,
so,
this is what I'm saying about language being so fucking oppressive.
Everybody's got to stop getting so worked up about what word I choose to use.
The better question is, what is your relationship history? What kind of people have you dated?
Yeah.
I've dated jerks. I've dated smart people. I've dated softies. I've dated emotionally unavailable people. I've dated men. I've dated women. You know what I mean? That's just another part of kind of person that you've dated.
Done.
I've dated a man who identifies as a woman. You know what I mean? Like, this is just the world that we live in now.
Yeah.
You're only who you are based on the people that you know and that you've encountered and that you've experienced.
True. And you only are you what everybody else says about you on top of what you say about yourself. You know, I mean, I feel like so many, like, depending on who you ask, so many people will have different answers for who is Nico. Everybody I've dated,
your friends,
publicly,
your family.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone's going to have a different. Yep.
And there's nothing I can do about that at all.
No.
And I'm totally okay with it. Like, I like that fact. I have nothing to hide. And I think that Hollywood has set up these rules for men.
And women. Look at Kristen Stewart.
But I think historically women in Hollywood have been more allowed to be vocal about their relationships with other women.
But this is slightly
what... Hold on. Because of how gender-biased Hollywood is... In the first place, I think that Hollywood puts way more weight on a leading man than they do on a leading woman.
This is partly what I was saying about the, like, I don't think lesbians are taken as seriously. Because if a man is gay, it's suddenly this, like, like devastating loss to the heterosexual community. Whereas women are assumed to, like, not... I don't know. It's weird.
Well, what it comes down to is these men that are running Hollywood, right? These, like, older straight guys, they find out that, like, somebody's two women are hooking up. It's like, yeah, that's fucking hot.
It's
like,
hot.
She's eating that other girl out.
And I know. It's like, not taken seriously.
He doesn't think two guys hooking up is hot. Like,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, women are also paid 30% less in Hollywood, just like any other fucking industry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know how we got to this, but let me ask you a question.
Yeah, baby.
How do you feel about dating a bisexual man?
I would be fine with it. I'd be a little nervous.
From like a threatening standpoint?
No, not from a threatening standpoint. From like, as long as everyone was tested, I'd be okay. I'm very concerned about my sexual
health.
You
are very concerned about STDs, which is great. Everybody should be concerned about STDs.
Yeah. I mean, I think I always ask people that I've been with, have you, like, been with men? I always ask men that I'm with, have you been with men? Because I'm really interested. I have yet to be with someone who's, like, had sex with a man. But I really like when men have done something physical with another man.
Oh, you're into it.
I think it's important. It shows that, you know, there's that, like, machismo, hetero... I just don't like really hetero men. I like men who, and literally every serious boyfriend that I've had, every man I've ever been interested in, people always ask if they're gay. And I always think they're gay at first.
Mm.
I like a real soft, and not even effeminate. I just like...
Sensitive men.
Sensitive men.
You love a sensitive man.
I love a sensitive man.
Yeah. You're going to have a very wonderful life, Molly Bernard.
Dude...
Seriously.
I hope so.
No, I know,
hope
so.
I can experience it fully without, you know, giving myself too much head.
But I think that because of the head that you are giving yourself, you are actually experiencing it more than other people would, because you're thinking about it.
Well, I'm yeah.
You're actively participating.
Well, that's my goal. See, that's the other thing, is I settle for nothing less. So if I'm placid about it, I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm not really doing it.
I love you.
I love you.
Let's be friends forever.
Oh, it's a done deal.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to The Love Bomb. I mean, how many of you have friends that you can write a poem for and they can write a poem for you? I mean, if you don't have that, go find one right now. It just makes your heart feel good. Keep on listening to The Love Bomb every Tuesday. Follow me on Instagram at Nico Tortorella. Check out Molly's Instagram and keep on spreading that love. Peace.
My name is Josh Reebok. Listen to The Marrow, conversations with creatives about who they are and why they make what they make, every Wednesday on At Will Radio.